What's going on, everybody? It's your buddy, it's your pal, Spaz Phoenix, the YWC Reality Check, here with WWE Last Week, your weekly rundown on the week that was last week in WWE. Hope you guys are enjoying this. I'm only about two or three episodes in, and I'm having a good time. I'll tell you something for free, right? Even though I said if NXT gets good again, I'll go back to doing NXT reviews properly. I do like doing this a bit more. I do like having a few notes here and there, sort of adding to it throughout the week, and having a more... This is going to sound really pretentious, but a more full conversation with you guys, and I like having the weekend to sort of put it all together. So, I hope you guys are liking it, because I'm liking doing it, and if I can balance this with, you know, previewing pay-per-views and all that kind of thing, and maybe have one review in the form of NXT, this has not been a bad thing for me. It means I can record it whenever I have time, just as long as you guys get it on the Monday mornings, and... I'm not gonna lie, it is a lot more of a relaxing task for me. I've got all my shit laid out in front of me. If you guys could picture this, you would be laughing your asses off. But there's a lot to go through. We're not gonna talk too much about NXT. We're gonna talk about the developments that happened in NXT, and that's about it. We are gonna focus on Raw and SmackDown, because there's a lot of stuff going on. And in the, you guys have probably noticed, I've got sort of a wrap-up section of these episodes, and I think there's more to talk about in the wrap-up than there is in the episodes, if you get my meaning, and hopefully by the end of the pod you will, or I wouldn't have done my job then, would I? So, what did we start off the week with? We started the week off, actually, with last week's NXT's sort of mini-announcement teasing the press conference between Roman Reigns and Logan Paul, and yeah, the following day, we got the press conference, we got it confirmed, what we basically all already knew, which is that Logan Paul, of all people, is fighting Roman Reigns for the undisputed WWE Universal Championship in Saudi Arabia. Now, all the typical people lost their shit because it's Logan Paul and all the baggage that that brings, and it's Saudi Arabia and it's all the baggage that that brings, and why isn't everybody getting a shot, and why aren't these people getting a shot, and why aren't they making stars? But those are the same people that hate the Saudi Arabia shows and wish the Saudi Arabia shows weren't a thing, which now... Let me be clear, the people that have the problems with the Saudi Arabia shows, I'm not arguing with them, but you can't argue both. You can't say it's a bad show and then say, oh, I wanted my favorite wrestler to have a good spot on that bad show. I don't think those two things line up very well. But you did get the press conference, and it was pretty cool because Solo Sikoa, we'll talk about it, for 1 week held the North American Championship. And so it was pretty cool to have Roman come out and lay down all his belts on the table, and the Usos come out and lay down all their belts on the table, and Solo Sikoa to lay his belt out on the table, and to have Logan Paul on the other side with like one of his reps, and that was about it. Big battle of words between the two, and Logan Paul called himself the table, which everybody memed the fuck out of almost immediately, which is fine and wonderful. And you look at the graphic for this, and I get it, but I don't at the same time. Like, it is... We are living in wrestling's, like, weirdest possible timeline right now. We're still reeling from the fact that Vince is gone. Triple H has taken over. A lot of things are getting better. A lot of things are coming back that we're going to talk about shortly. We're reeling from the fact that AEW is, in fact, a shit company and will treat you like shit unless you're one of the elite. People are leaving AEW. Imagine that. Imagine that, you know, big, bad, scary WWE and AEW people are jumping ship. Oh, yes. Not going to get too much into that. I am going to do something at some point about the whole, like, AEW, like, fucking over CM Punk. But I'm hopefully going to have Guapo along for the ride with that, or else that video is just going to be a rant, and as much fun as that would be, I would rather have a concrete breakdown of how they're stupid, and he might help with that, so that'll be something to look forward to on another day when the scheduling gods like us and I can sit down with Guapo and we can get something recorded. We will tackle that. But in the weird, wacky, alternate timeline version of pro wrestling that's currently happening, Roman Reigns versus Logan Paul doesn't even scratch the surface of being one of the biggest stories this year, or one of the biggest weird what the fucks this year. So go get it out of your system. Get the, oh my god, the Saudi Arabia shows are still a thing. How can they be doing this? I mean, we perfectly know that they have a 10-year contract, but we're going to act shocked and surprised and dismayed every single time. Go ahead. Cool. Get it out of your system. I'll watch it on the night for the freak show that it is, and everybody will get on with life. Oh my god, I'm not going to watch Raw, except you are. Oh my god, I'm not going to watch SmackDown anymore, except you are, because look at their ratings. SmackDown's ratings are more than twice what AEW marketed their biggest Dynamite of the year as in ratings. Oh, the demographic. Okay, but numbers are numbers, so eat it. Now, speaking of numbers, where there's numbers on both sides, that metaphor is not going to work at all. Survivor Series. We went into Monday night before Raw, and the big piece of news that day was how Triple H is changing Survivor Series. And it's a 1-2 punch, really. It's one punch that's going to make everybody else happy, and it's one punch that's going to make me really, really, really happy. Now, the 1-2 punch is they're getting rid of Raw versus SmackDown, which is fine. You can take that or leave that. But they're also bringing in War Games. I love War Games. I really do. I never watched it when it was a WCW or an NWA thing. My introduction to War, and I mean, I've seen like old videos of War Games, don't get me wrong, but my introduction to, okay, the current wrestling that I'm watching right now is doing War Games, is the NXT version of War Games, which is fucking great, which was basically owned by the Undisputed Era. Let's be real, like the first three War Games matches all had the Undisputed Era in them. Wasn't one of them, one of them was when it was the 3-on-3-on-3, and then the rest of them were, they were one half of the match. I think, I could be wrong, don't quote me on this because I didn't look it up. I think the first War Games that didn't have Undisputed Era on one side of it was the Women's War Games match, which was also fucking awesome. And that was part of that whole Survivor Series weekend where it was NXT versus Raw versus SmackDown at Survivor Series. So those two shows kind of melded together, which was another awesome thing. Now, if they fix NXT, I wouldn't mind a proper NXT versus WWE full stop as a Survivor Series thing. Do it once. Don't make it what you do every year. Don't make War Games what you do every year. But the other part of this, and the other part of it that makes it a bit fun, is if you're doing War Games, that means the entire show has two rings, and you can have a lot of fun with that. Now, the other part of this as well is you got rid of the Raw versus SmackDown, which works for a lot of reasons, because Roman Reigns right now holds both championships. So in the immortal words of Simon Miller, I was really looking forward to seeing Roman Reigns face himself. Good one. Simon's a good guy. Go check him out. He's fantastic. But you could say the same thing for the Usos, and because there's only one set of women's tag team champions, you could have said the same thing for Damage Control. Would they have fought each other? It would all be very weird. The ironic thing about it is because we are so used to the Raw versus SmackDown at this point, people were actually genuinely getting looking forward to the US champion versus the Intercontinental champion, which would of course be Bobby Lashley versus Gunther, which would have wrecked. And I'm not gonna lie, you could still do, and people would still be interested, and like you could have Bobby Lashley just show up on SmackDown one day, like totally respectable, like face to face with Gunther, and be like, hey look, I know we're not doing Raw versus SmackDown anymore, but I also know there was a lot of people looking forward to you and me going at it at Survivor Series, and they could just have it on the card as some sort of, like, you know, special challenge or whatever you want to call it. That could still be really good. But yeah, no, in the past, like, you would have had whoever was the Raw champions versus whoever the SmackDown champions were, and they made for some good matches, and just in general, some 5-on-5 matches were always fun. I would rather go back to the old days when it was 4-on-4, but that's just me. There's a part of me that hopes it's not going to be Raw versus SmackDown, but there's a part of me that hopes we still have a Survivor Series match on there. Like, there's a bunch of different factions now, if you look at it. I mean, we've still got Legado del Fantasma waiting in the wings as well. It'll be interesting to see how they fit into things. But you've got, I mean, the New Day is really a tag team right now because of Big E. We want Big E to get better, obviously. But, you know, you've got Damage Control could take, like, add Rhea Ripley to Damage Control for a night, and they could take on four baby faces, or you could do something else like that. I hope that there's still a Survivor Series match there. I hope it doesn't completely mask the old Survivor Series thing. People have brought up the Deadly Games tournament, but that, other than it literally happening at Survivor Series, there's nothing that made that a Survivor Series thing. It was just a one-night tournament. It was very King of the Ring-esque. And if you're going to do that while we're in the mode of bringing things back that matter, bring back King of the Ring. That's an entirely separate conversation to have at a different time, but there's no reason why you can't, you know, replace Backlash with King of the Ring, or replace No Way Out with King of the Ring. All those names that sound cool but really don't have any actual meaning. Like, what is the theme of Backlash other than it's all the matches left over from WrestleMania, and that's why they call it WrestleMania Backlash, which is also very, very lame. So Survivor Series has been fixed, according to most people, and I will tentatively agree. They're also bringing in War Games, which I think is awesome. We've got Roman Reigns and Logan Paul to look forward to at Crown Jewel, and we go on to tonight's Raw. What I thought was going to be the main event, to be perfectly honest with you. We had Seth Rollins versus Bobby Lashley for that U.S. Championship. Big thing coming out of this, I mean, it's Lashley and Rollins. They're going to have a good match. Seth is going to be the sneaky, conniving, you know, Healy little weasel and all that kind of thing. The best part of this was when Lashley was down and Rollins went for the curb stomp and he just blocked it. He just sort of stood there and Rollins sort of stood on his neck being like, what the fuck? And then the match just kept on going. But that was like, that's not something that's been done. And when you have something that hasn't been done, when it's done, it matters. Something other companies could take into account. Now Riddle cost them the match because Riddle and Rollins have this ongoing thing, which I thought was getting a bit old, I'm not going to lie, and then they immediately proved me wrong. So if you wonder why these episodes are so positive, even the stuff that I think is going a bit in a downward direction, they managed to bring back up, and I really like that. Damage Control come out, they're having a celebration. It's 2 weeks late, but whatever. Everybody said, well, they should have had their celebration last week, and it's like, why? If you were cocky, arrogant heels, would you celebrate being champions for just 1 week, or would you just keep on celebrating it? Keep the momentum going for Bayley's obvious match with Bianca Belair at Extreme Rules. Now, they're interrupted by Belair, who, you know, has to be in the spotlight of everything, and she brings out Bliss and Asuka, and she runs them all down, and it's fine. Asuka used to be this, you know, killer, and now she's like a baby face, and they made some comment. This is where I love it, though. Bayley makes some comment about, you know, Alexa Bliss recovering from her latest lobotomy. And then Alexa Bliss steps up. You guys know me. I'm really, really biased. I really like Alexa Bliss. I think because she happens to be white, happens to be blonde, she gets a lot of shit thrown at her that she doesn't deserve, a la Charlotte Flair. But she steps up. She goes face-to-face with Bayley. They set a match for later on in the night. And I'm thinking, okay, cool. Cool. One of mine is getting some focus tonight. I really like it. We get more of that on SmackDown as well. There's a little spoiler for you. But it's sort of something and nothing. Like, These three come together, the six of them come together, and two of them decide they're going to have a fight. It's pretty cookie cutter, it's pretty cut and paste, it's not going to set the world on fire, other than it gives us a main event tonight. Yes, Tony Khan, you can put women in the main event, even if there's not a title involved. Just a little note from your buddy here. Austin Theory versus Kevin Owens. Crazy somersault neckbreaker by Theory was one of the first things that caught my eye in this match. It was a great put-over effort by Kevin Owens, but there was no back down in Theory either. Those were the two main stories going into this match. Now, you got Owens, who can make everybody look like $1 million, and Theory could have looked like $1 million, you know, sniveling, you know, cowardly little heel, much like we saw with Rollins in the previous match, but Theory actually showed some backbone, actually showed some, no, I'm fucking in this fight, which is a step away from every other cookie-cutter sort of comedic loser heel trope you can think of. The match ends, however. I mean, Kevin Owens is on a ridiculous push right now, and Theory already has the briefcase to his name, so Owens won the match. But how did he win the match? Theory, finally, after putting up a pretty fucking good fight, I have to underline that. Like, Kevin Owens is on a tear. This is the Kevin Owens story, for the most part. But it is also the slow fixing of the Vince McMahon ass kisser version of Theory. Like, they're under the radar, they're fixing that as well. He's still an asshole, he's still annoying, but he's an asshole that is going to come and fight you if you bring the fight to him like Owens did. How did he lose, though? He lost because he found himself in a downward spot. He went for his briefcase, and out at ringside pops Johnny Gargano to stop him, to pull the briefcase away, to have him do the comedy wide-eyed reaction, and Owens gets the win. I think he hit him with the cannonball. I didn't write down the finish, because I'm smart, but I think he hit him with the cannonball and then the pop-up powerbomb. Also love that they've got him bringing back the pop-up powerbomb, which is nice. It was a really cool connective thing for him to be using the stunner for a while because he was going for babyface reactions. Now that he's this, like, I don't care if you're a good guy or a bad guy, if you're in front of me, I'm going to kill you, like, guy, like the best version of a tweener, you don't need to be doing a stunner for pops anymore. You can do the pop-up powerbomb, you can do the apron bomb spots, and as I said, we can see a little bit more of NXT Kevin Owens. After the match, Owens fucks off, he's got his you know, finality with Theory. Gargano droops over him, laughing at him, you know, just sort of taunting him a little bit with his own briefcase, and then drops the briefcase on his nuts, because why not? And everybody's like, oh, this, you know, already they're ruining Johnny Gargano. They're not making him a good babyface. A good babyface can still have a sense of humor. A good babyface can still have a sense of comeuppance, if that makes sense. So Gargano dropping the briefcase in the nuts, symbolically, because it's like, hey, you were about to use this on somebody else. How does it feel to be put on you? And it goes to the promo that Owens cut the previous week about, you know, guys like me, guys like Gargano, and guys like you. There's a big difference. There's a million guys like you. There's one Johnny Gargano. There's one me. So while Gargano is going to get involved because he wants to fuck with Theory, because that's the thing moving forward, he's also got to have a mutual respect with Kevin Owens, because they are cut from that cloth. And as a tag team partner, which we're going to talk about later on, he doesn't quite have Ciampa back yet. Ciampa's doing Miz stuff still, which is fine. We recap the Roman versus Logan press conference that was done last Saturday. We've already been through that. And then, because they're the number one contenders, the Brawling Brutes are on Raw for reasons and without Sheamus. Now, I will say, the Brawling Brutes coming out to what is basically Sheamus' music is kind of funny, but I've been discussing this with friends of ours, you know, friends of mine, friends of yours, friends of the channel, who are not necessarily watching WWE right now, and it's really funny, specifically since Clash at the Castle and Sheamus's battle with Gunther, how his sudden uptick in popularity has spilled over to Butch and Ridge Holland. I should say Pete Dunne, but it is what it is. Now, they come out and they're basically bragging about how they're going to beat the Usos on Friday. We know that's not going to happen, but it is what it is. They get confronted by the Street Profits, and they have a impromptu, I put it in tight air quotes because everybody's in their ring gear, really, really good match. Super athletic stuff from Montez Ford, super athletic stuff from Angelo Dawkins. Commentary does their weird, we need to push Angelo Dawkins because we know you all think he's the Jannetty of the group. And I'm just like, the more you do that, the more it becomes obvious that this is the guy you're worried about. So that's in an overall Street Profits story going forward thing, but it didn't take anything away from this match specifically. Butch is going back, more and more Pete Dunne stuff, the finger stuff, the arm stuff, the joint manipulation, the sort of like the gritty submission type stuff that he was doing as Pete Dunne rather than Butch. He's Pete Dunne in everything but name now. They've gotten off of this, like, making him this, like, rabid, like, shaggy-doo type character, and they've got him close to being back how he was. And him and Ridge Holland, despite how different they are a really good team. Now, the three of them together with Sheamus are a great trio, don't get me wrong. Hell, WWE Trios champions right there, why not? I mean, don't we hand those belts out like candy these days? That's right, but at least they don't run the company. Moving on. They make a really good team despite how different they are, which is cool, and obviously they get the win to perpetrate their match on Friday with the Usos. And it kind of contributes to the Street Profits as well, because they do have this sort of on-again, off-again, are they going to split the Street Profits, are they not? Which, I don't know if they are or they're not, but if they are, they're on quite a losing streak right now, which is sort of going up under the radar, because usually their matches currently are about whoever they're facing, and this was no exception. This match was made to make the Brawling Brutes look good before their title shot on Friday. But while all that is happening, they're also getting this losing streak. So if they do decide to pull the trigger and one of them goes heel, you could say, hey, I'm walking away from you because, hey, we haven't won a match in a fucking dog's age. Everything works. Alpha Academy are trying to threaten Johnny Gargano in the back because he cost their friend Austin Theory a match, and they try to get in his face, and Owens comes up behind him and says, hey, how about a match next week since we're going to be back up in Canada? I think they're going to be in Edmonton, I think. The Rogers Center? Anyways, so they're going to be back in Canada anyways. And this whole idea that Kevin Owens The whole idea that Kevin Owens fucks with Chad Gable when they're in Canada is a funny little side story that's going to be played up at some point, I would assume, next week. And, it's just a great match as well. Now, would I rather see American Alpha versus DIY? No. Well, yes, but... one of them's retired, the other one's doing something with The Miz, and they both have new partners, and this is what we get. Kevin Owens, Johnny Gargano are going to destroy the Alpha Academy next week, or should I say today, when you're listening to this podcast. But it is what it is. Now everybody online is saying, well, why didn't they make it a trio? Because you know that Theory's going to get involved. And it's like, yeah, exactly. Theory's going to get involved. And him getting involved is going to be a heel thing because he's not in the match. If he's in the match, him getting involved in the match wouldn't be a heel thing. Hope that makes sense. I want him to be on the outside looking in so that when he comes in, he's a disruptive force. It plays up his role as a heel rather than just being another combatant in the match. I don't know how much clearer I can make that. I don't know why so many people found that so hard to wrap their heads around. Judgment Day versus Rey Mysterio and Riddle. The boos that Dominic Mysterio got when he tried to... Judgment Day just sort of went out there and cut a promo and they all sucked each other's dicks. Let's be real. They put over... Priest, they put over Balor, they put over Ripley, and then all three of them put over Dominic. And as soon as Dominic had the microphone, the boos that he got were drowning out his promos, which was fucking great. And he kind of got lost, and Ripley kind of came along and said, speak louder, so that we don't have to hear this noise and all that kind of thing. Rollins comes back out during the match to attack Riddle. Ray chases after Rollins, and there's a big mess. On the outside... I will say, we all know Dominic Mysterio is not the best actor in the world, but Dominic trying to get involved in the match, trying to block his dad, when his dad grabs a chair and he sort of falls to his knees with his arms out and says, go ahead, dad, hit me, go ahead, dad, hit me. And then they goes back into the ring and obviously they lose because numbers games is a thing because Riddle has chased Rollins to the back. As we come back from the commercial break, we get another fun little tidbit of old NXT. Rollins is there. He's like, you want me at Extreme Rules? You can have it. You name it. Riddle, I want you in the fight pit. That's it. That's all he needed to say. Riddle, one of the first guys to ever, I think the first guy to ever be in the fight pit. Cause wasn't it Riddle versus Thatcher? Am I thinking about that correctly? But Riddle, the MMA guy, the guy from the fight pit, is challenging Seth Rollins to a fight pit match at Extreme Rules. So, we're going to have two different types of rings at Extreme Rules, and then at Survivor Series, we're just plain out going to have two rings. The setups for these next couple of pay-per-views are going to be very interesting visually. I know we always talk about, why don't they make a different stage? Why don't they make a different stage? And it's like, well, yeah... That's one thing, and it's definitely an apt criticism, don't get me wrong. I do as well, along with the rest of you, think that they should change the stages. But there's more that you can change about a wrestling show than just the stage. Now, I don't think it went very well, but back a while ago when SmackDown was simulcast with that music festival thing, and they had a wrestling ring out on the stage there, and people were on the ground walking up on the stage watching the wrestling happen. Now, that wasn't pulled off very well, in my opinion. It didn't look very well on TV. But I do want to give them the credit of they tried to do something totally outside the box. And it looked different, and it looked cool. And it was shot from the stage side, which, in wrestling terms, would I guess be the hard camera side. So you had that entire festival audience behind it. So, from a TV perspective, the visual of that was so different and so... unique that it will, even though I think it was bad, it will stick out in your mind as something that was different. Now, in this case, where are they going to put the fight pit? We know when it was in the performance center, they just put the fight pit right next to the ring, and then that was that. But you're going to be doing this in an arena, like two rings for the War Games. We know what that looks like. What do you do with the fight pit before and after that match at Extreme Rules? I don't know, but I'm willing to give them the chance show me, give my eyes something different to look at. It's not that hard, but at the same time, it's very hard. People focus way too much on the stage, which is definitely an issue, but there are other things you can do to make a show look different. You can shoot it different. You can shoot from different angles. You can have different people directing the camera cuts, etc. You can get Kevin Dunn off of production. It's another story for another day. But we have the fight pit at Extreme Rules, and that's fucking amazing. We have Miz TV, where the guest is supposed to be Dexter Lumis. Miz comes out, talks about himself, talks about how he's been tormented by Dexter Lumis and all that kind of thing, and the entire time that he's been talking, you see a knife come up through the canvas, and Dexter Lumis pokes his head out like an evil whack-a-mole, tries to pull the Miz into the what was it, when it was Kane or when it was Bray Wyatt? Oh, he's dragging him to hell, but Dexter Lumis isn't supernatural, he's just kind of a serial killer, so he's literally dragging him under the ring, which doesn't quite work, but it's, for the goofiness that it is, it absolutely works, because Ciampa then grabs the microphone and keeps bopping him on the head to get Miz out of the hole, and then they have a big stare down with the hole in the ring as Dexter Lumis's head pops up one more time and Miz and Ciampa fuck off. Is this dumb? It's absolutely dumb. I fucking love it. I don't even care. Dexter Lumis popping his head up. I want a regular show, like a regular Raw to go on, where like nobody notices that the cut has happened because they're fighting at the other side of the ring. And just in random matches, I just want Dexter Lumis's head to pop up. Because Dexter Lumis Whack-A-Mole should be a video game. Should it not? It is kind of a bummer because it still involves Tommaso Ciampa, who I would love to see get back together with Gargano at some point. Either he stays a heel and you reinitiate the Gargano-Ciampa feud, or eventually you put DIY back together and Gargano successfully pulls him away from The Miz. Either one of those stories would be absolutely fantastic. We quickly go to a graphic where it's announced that we're going to get Priest versus Riddle next week on Raw. Should say tonight, sorry. Time travel is a thing. But then they're laughing about it in the back and they're all talking about, you know, how Rhea Ripley is Dom's daddy, which is weird, and how Priest is going to take him out on the town and get him shit-faced and all that sort of thing, and then Finn sort of steps away from the rest of them, and he approaches AJ Styles, which I thought was very cool, because A, obviously Bullet Club connection, that's fine, but B, also they teamed up against the Judgment Day initially, and Finn's sort of gaslighting him a little bit, saying, hey man, I haven't heard from you in a while, like, what kind of friend are you, what type of thing, like, are we good? And he says, well, you turned your back on me. I never turned your back, during the Judgment Day, but I haven't done anything to you, which is a valid argument. I mean, if you want to take the Finn Balor stance, and I know Finn Balor is supposed to be the heel, but he's made a decision for his career and with his actions towards other people, but he hasn't done anything to AJ. AJ, on the other hand, is casting judgment on him, ironically enough, no pun intended. So Balor's the one that could, by all rights, be offended in this scenario, which is kind of odd, because, I mean, AJ Styles is becoming one of those people that we all know that hasn't really been done bad by anybody, but is going to cast judgment on somebody because they're seen as the bad guy. So if I cast judgment on him, then I'll be seen as the good guy. And we all know people like that in real life. But, I mean, Finn gives him a hug and says, I'll always have your back. And I thought they were going to too sweet, but I don't think they did. And then it cuts off. Now, once again, does this lead us to AJ Styles sort of saying, you know, I haven't done much recently. Maybe I do need to think about rejoining my brother over there. Or does it lead to AJ Styles joining some kind of team against the Judgment Day? Or just simply reinitiating a feud with Finn Balor? Because we all know the one time we got them properly, that one time where I think it was like the Mumps went through WWE and they had to remove Bray Wyatt and they had to remove, I think it was Roman Reigns. That's when we had Angle in the Shield for a night, which was awkward. But the only time we had Finn Balor versus AJ Styles one-on-one on pay-per-view was kind of an accident. And then everybody went nuts because it was a great match and they did the two sweet at the end and everything was tickety-poo. But I don't think we've had a proper feud with these guys. So that would be fun in its own right. Like, even if you take away all the Judgment Day stuff, which I think is great, by the way, the more obnoxious they get, the better. And the fact that they're now on this sort of recruitment tour, like they tried to recruit Riddle, Finn Balor's now going to try and recruit a friend. Rhea Ripley has corrupted, quote-unquote, Dominic Mysterio. They are a obnoxious bad guy group, but they're also in recruitment mode. And I think that's always a cool thing to see, because now they've each tried one. I go back to it. If Balor is trying to bring in Styles, if Priest maybe is the one trying to bring in Riddle, because that's the match we're getting next week, and if Rhea has already successfully brought over Dominic, each one of them are picking their next, you know, members, brothers, sisters, whatever you want to call it, and I think that's a cool story to tell. I don't think you go and like double them in size automatically. Look at something like the Bloodline, which we're going to talk about later. Add one at a time. Add Jay. Then have Jimmy come back. Then have Jimmy's mind turned. Then have somebody like Sammy come in and want to be part of it because he sees how powerful it is. Then have all of them taken out and pick up Solo Sikoa as a new alternative. And then, before you know it, you've got an army that's believable, not just, hey, I picked a bunch of random people from catering, so to speak. We got a great video package on Alexa Bliss, much deserved in my opinion. I'm sure it pissed off all the right people. And then in the main event, you had Bliss versus Bayley, which was a great match. Everybody was fighting on the outside until Asuka goes for a hip attack and rams her own hips into the steel steps. Heels get the advantage after that. Bayley gets the win. There's a 3-on-1 beatdown on Bianca Belair, and Bayley finally says, okay, all right, I accept. I'll challenge you for your title, and I'll do it at Extreme Rules, as she says this, as she's standing over an unconscious Bianca Belair, which is always nice. It's always good to see. You don't want to see people getting too high on their own shit. The only thing we don't have, and this isn't listed on the... I've looked on Wiki and I've looked on WWE.com. This match is not actually technically listed on the match card yet, because I don't think they've decided yet what type of match it's going to be. But overall, we did... As I say, we did a bunch of stuff in this show. It's not anything, like nobody debuted this week, nobody did this, that, or the next. Everything just sort of moved on. Damage Control moved on. Lashley Riddle moved on. The Brawling Brutes got to move on to SmackDown, which is a slightly different thing. Gargano's return and Owens' push collectively are being moved on to next week in that tag match. The Judgment Day story moves on. Miz Dexter moves on. The possibility of now a Finn-AJ feud moves on. And we get Bayley and Belair confirmed for Extreme Rules. Everything just kind of worked. If you guys remember when I did old school black and white NXT reviews, there was a lot of episodes, like especially as we got closer to a pay-per-view, where I was like, nothing really exciting happened on the show, but it was all very functional. And that sounds like a criticism, but it's not. It's like, tonight wasn't exciting, but it's got me excited for fill in the blank. And that's what this Raw was for the most part. NXT is more of a mixed bag right now, because we know this is the first of two pre-taped shows because they're getting ready for the new Black and Gold NXT. There's really only three stories to take away from here. You got Nathan Frazier defeated Axiom in their best of three series, so now they're one apiece. The match was insane for two guys that I don't know, and I keep saying it like this. Once again, this is not meant to be a negative thing, but for two guys that I don't know, I got into the match. I'm very much a case of I'm going to be much more into the match, even if it's not great, if I know who the guys are. These guys, I don't know from a hole in the ground, and they still had me on the tick for their entire match. Go back, check it out. It was really good. But the show started with Solo Sikoa and Carmelo Hayes in the back with Shawn Michaels, and they're talking about the North American Championship, the Solo one last week. Shawn Michaels was saying, like, it wasn't a sanctioned match, you didn't even win the fan vote, you're not even on the brand anymore, I have to ask you to hand over the championship, I wish you a lot of good on whatever you're going to do on SmackDown, I know you're going to kill it. And he sort of walks out with his hand held high because he never lost the title, and he just sort of says to Carmelo, it's like, hey, I told you I had next. And he's like, yeah, you had next. And then Carmelo thinks the title's going to be handed back to him. But no, Shawn Michaels says, no, you're not going to get it either because you did, you know. He sort of gave him a pride goeth before the fall speech when he's like, well, you did accept the match and you did lose. So now the title's held in abeyance. And in five, I think it's like either 5 or 6 weeks at Halloween Havoc, let's not let that go under the radar. Halloween Havoc is returning, not as an elevated weekly episode, but as a proper Saturday night. It's still in the Performance Center, don't get me wrong, but it's got its own night. It's on a Saturday. It's a actual premium live event, and I'll do the wavy arms like Simon does. Halloween Havoc is back, and it's going to be treated properly. And by the time we get to that, we will be into whatever this new black and gold NXT is. So for me, you guys know me, outside of wrestling, love movies, love creepy movies, love fucked up movies. The idea of Halloween Havoc coming back to NXT in the first place was great. When they got Shotzi Blackheart to host it, that was fucking great. And then they tried to do it in the, you know, Rainbows and Butterflies, Unicorn Farts NXT, and it really didn't hit the same way. The fact that Halloween Havoc is going to be the first pay-per-view under the banner of this, whatever this new black and gold NXT is going to be a litmus test for what this NXT is going to be, in my personal opinion. Now, add to that, we're going to have a five-way ladder match for the NXT North American Championship. It's going to be Carmelo Hayes, who was the former champion, so he gets a bye, I guess. And we're going to have qualifying matches for the other four spots. I think I've got the five correct. It could be six. Don't quote me. I could be wrong. It's going to be Carmelo. It's going to be Oro Mensah, who debuted on this week's episode of NXT and got a win over Grayson Waller with help from Apollo Crews, because Apollo Crews can see the future even though his eye is bleeding. I haven't talked much about the Apollo Crews gimmick, because I don't really know what to say about the Apollo Crews gimmick, I'm not going to lie. Now, this is the perfect example of, you know, we always complain whenever there's qualifications for anything, whether it's a ladder match, whether it's a... The classic example is the Elimination Chamber, right? Like, they do five qualifiers and then, like, a last chance battle royal thing. I think Grayson Waller is going to fall into that category, because Grayson Waller's somebody you want in this ladder match. But Oro Mensah, who's a brand new guy debuting on the show, who you would also like to see in that ladder match, and could use a win over somebody who is as established as Grayson Waller is. Now, the 2.0 version of NXT isn't great. There's a reason I stopped reviewing it. But in that time, there are guys like Solo Sikoa, like Carmelo Hayes, like Trick Williams, like Grayson Waller, who did get over as much as you can get over in that Rainbow Factory. So, what do? You kill two birds with one stone. You have Oro Mensah go over Grayson Waller, and it's like, oh, here's this new unknown quantity that's going to be in this ladder match. How's that going to factor in? You got a bit of intrigue, and you can still do the last chance battle royal or whatever the case may be, and throw Grayson Waller back in there anyway, because now you got Oro Mensah, who's the brand new guy who's trying to prove himself, and Grayson Waller, who's been embarrassed by the new guy and wants to get some revenge, probably in that match. Great. Fantastic. Now, are they going to put our Apollo Crews and his bleeding eye in the match as well? I don't really know. Wes Lee was also offered a bye into the ladder match and said, no, I want to earn my way in instead. Now, super babyface thing to do. It's like, no, I don't want any handouts. I want it to be earned, right? But you did earn it by winning the fans' vote last week. So they've gone a little too far in that regard in trying to make him like the super babyface. But does anybody think that he's not going to be... It's Wes Lee. Like, on the main roster, it would be like saying if Montez Ford was a singles guy, it would be like having this ladder match and not putting Montez Ford in it. Because he's fucking fantastic, and he needs something. He really does. I'm sorry, like, he's a great guy, but there's still... He still feels like one half of a tag team when he comes out, because they fucked over his tag team partner. We don't need to talk about that. But... So you've got Carmelo in there, who's great, who's main roster ready, who doesn't need to win this, but it would be kind of cool if he did. Oro Mensah, who was apparently on NXT UK, but who the hell watched NXT UK at the end there? I'm going to guess Grayson Waller. Wes Lee is facing Tony D'Angelo next week for his qualification, and I'm saying that in tight air quotes, but you're probably going to have Wes Lee, and I don't know who else you throw in there. Maybe an Apollo, maybe... I don't know who else. I really don't. It would be cool if the third match in the best of three between Nathan Frazier and Axiom was a qualifier for the ladder match, because watching those guys this week, they absolutely would add to it. Then we had J.D. Drake. J.D. McDonough taking on Tyler Bate in a number one contenders match. And I, once again, watching Twitter, listening to what other people have said about this over the week, I will take your argument that both of these guys have already fought and lost to Bron Breakker. Bron Breakker has destroyed both of these guys individually, so why are we having a loser's number one contenders match? I get it. It's fine. It's true. But it's for what we get next. I don't know what to say about the match. If you saw these guys fight in NXT UK, you know it's going to be a hard-hitting combination of brawling, high-flying, submission stuff. Pretty much all the things that I like about Pete Dunne. Tyler Bate being the guy that's small and always surprises you with how strong he is. JD McDonagh doing excellent, despite what most people say, with this like whole like psycho go ahead and hit me, I'm gonna like it type character, was all good. JD McDonagh wins with a top rope Spanish fly followed up by the Devil Inside, which is a really good, I think it's kind of funny. Devil Inside was a play on his last name when he was Jordan Devlin, but he's not Jordan Devlin anymore. He's JD McDonagh, and the JD is Jordan Devlin, let's be real. But I think it's funny because it used to be like, people used to say it all in as like one word. Because it is a pun, because it is the Devlin side, they used to say it like that. But now that it's not his name anymore, the commentators make a point of saying the Devil Inside. And I just don't think that's necessary. I think if you know, you know. If you don't know, it doesn't save you from anything, so that's fine. And the one thing that I had spoiled for me before I watched the show, after the match, was the return of Ilya Dragunov, who had apparently been out with injury, which is why NXT UK had to have a brand new tournament to crown Tyler Bate as their champion, so that they could do the champion versus champion match that was all done out of order, that everybody lost their minds over. But Ilya Dragunov is back. If you know what he's like, he's fucking crazy, and he sort of stood between JD McDonagh and Bron Breakker, and it was announced later, I think, on Twitter, or it might have just been listed on Wikipedia later on when I went to look. It is, in fact, a triple threat match between JD McDonagh, Bron Breakker, and Ilya Dragunov for the, I guess, the singular unified NXT championship. Now, if it was me, and I want to be selfish, I would have not done this number one contenders match, had Ilya Dragunov interfere in the match so that there was no winner, and just made it a fatal four-way. Because Tyler Bate's awesome, and the minute I saw him on main roster NXT, I'm like, it's good. It's really, really good. So we've got two matches set so far for the... We've got two matches set so far for the Halloween Havoc show. Like I say, the first premium live event of the new NXT, I guess, 3.0 era. And there's a couple of things I want to say. Most of them have to do with the North American Championship. Now, was it kind of lame that he won the North American Championship and got to hold it for a week? Yes, absolutely. They could have done a lot. If you listened to last week's episode, I speculated on a lot of different things that they could have done to make that mean more, to have a bit of cross-promotion between SmackDown and NXT, but I understand that those two brands are on different shows, and do the networks want to be advertising each other? I get the practical excuse me, the practical elements of that. But also, if you think back all the way to Paige coming to the main roster and surprising AJ Lee and becoming the champion on Raw, they did it back then. They made her relinquish her NXT championship because obviously she had moved forward, she had found a new home, and she was going for different things. So it might not be the most exciting thing, but it does mean NXT has at least been consistent with people that have won titles and thought they were going to carry them to the main roster. Now, people are going to say, well, what about Dolph Ziggler? Well, Dolph Ziggler was somebody that came in for a cup of coffee to quickly put Bron Breakker over. So I think if you're writing the rule book, there's your rule-proving exception, so to speak. But now we get into, like, not only have we gone with the NXT history of how they treat those titles in those situations, we also kind of go into the history a little bit of the North American Championship and ladder matches. Because right now we have no champion. We are reintroducing a brand new North American champion on Halloween Havoc in, what is it, 5 or 6 weeks. And the original North American Championship was a ladder match. And yes, trust me, I know, some of these people that I'm about to list off are canceled now, it's fine. But the matches were great. The original match was TakeOver New Orleans when it was Dream versus Lars versus EC3 versus Ricochet versus Adam Cole, Bay Bay versus Killian Dane. Who's going to argue with me that that match wasn't a lot of fun? TakeOver 30, you had Gargano, Grimes, Priest, Bronson, and Dream. Again, Diddler Dream we could do without these days, but who's going to argue with me that the match at the time wasn't great? And even in the 2.0 era, at Stand and Deliver, you had Carmelo versus Santos versus Solo versus Grimes versus Waller. And who's going to argue with me that that wasn't great? So they've sort of, and I'm not going to say that it's 100%, it's not carved in stone or anything like that, but there is a history and a link between multi-person ladder matches and this particular title. Multi-person ladder matches where nobody's the champion going in and this title. And I think for all the flaws of what they've done, this one week reign that Solo Sikoa had, which wasn't great, I'll admit it. Even the stuff that's not great makes sense if you think back on it with an objective eye and whatever. So now, that's NXT all sorted. So now we move over to SmackDown, and SmackDown has my loosest notes ever because I was watching it when I was really tired, so this should go by in a flash. We start off, and this is why I say the Sami Zayn story is the best mini-story within the best story, which is the Bloodline, in all of wrestling. Period. Number two would be CM Punk and MJF. And then you've got every other story in wrestling, and somewhere near the bottom you've got Kenny the Beta and the Wannabe Cowboy. Roman comes out. He comes out with the full Bloodline. And Jesus Christ, like I said a minute ago, the way they slowly built this group. Roman adds Jay. Jay brings in Jimmy. Jimmy had to get his mind turned. Sammy came on his own because he saw the power that was being created by Roman Reigns and his group. And then finally Solo Sikoa being conscripted into the group at Clash at the Castle. That means more when it's built slowly, and when you see them all on the stage at once, it does have an impact, and it's just a thing. And what I love, and what they've done the past couple of weeks even, is as the Bloodline get a new t-shirt, or a new merch, or new hats, or whatever, Sami Zayn has the one t-shirt that he's worn since the first time he started trying to suck up to Kevin Owens. And I think, or sorry, not to Kevin, to Roman Reigns. Kevin Owens is going to probably come into the story way later. They come out. Paul Heyman puts over, they put over the tag team title match later on tonight. They put over the Usos. Usos get put over again later on in the night as well. They put over they skim over the fact that Solo Sikoa is no longer the North American champion, but Paul Heyman puts him over, says he was sent by the elders to take care of his tribal chief so that the Usos could go on and create their own destiny. And I thought that was a very interesting, cool part because it lets the Usos kind of be on their own, but not really. And Roman calls him to the front and he says, yeah, you might have been sent by the elders, but you work for me now. You know, pledge your allegiance, all that kind of thing. And he says, you know, I acknowledge you, my tribal chief. There's a big hug and whatever. And then, I'm sorry, the best piece of wrestling cinema I've seen in a long time. They're all celebrating. They're all in a good mood. They're all getting ready to go back to the back and, you know, pop bottles or do whatever Samoans do. And then Sammy grabs a microphone. And Sammy just looks, he's got this look about him that's like the bug eternally waiting to be squashed. And it's just, you know, I just wanted to take a second, you know, I know I'm not really part of the family, but you guys have accepted me anyways. And Roman, I accept you as my tribal chief too. And Roman gets all serious. And it's so good. It's all in Sami Zayn's face. He looks at him and he says, what are you doing? You know, you're just tagging along with us. Like, you're not really part of this. You're just hanging on. Why are you wearing that t-shirt? Take it off. And Jey Uso at this point, who's the other like absolute superstar of this whole story, looks like he's about to bust in his jeans. Starts yelling, screaming, yeah, yeah, take it off. Take the shirt off. Take it off. And he says, no, I'm not kidding, man. Like, take it off. I never want to see, crawls out of his skin practically and tears the shirt right off Sami Zayn's body. And Roman just says, I never want to see you in that shirt again. Long, long, long pregnant pause until he finally cracks a smile and he says, because I got you a new one. And if you've seen the stuff on WWE Shop, you know that there is a Sami Zayn honorary use t-shirt. But when he threw it to when he threw it to Sami Zayn, and Sami Zayn's just like, oh yeah, he's like the kid at Christmas. And again, Roman smiling and laughing and like, you know, like a parent glad that his kid liked the present, right? And Jimmy's like, yeah, giving him a little salute from behind, and Solo's like, yeah, like pumping his fist a little bit, and even Paul Heyman's sort of like giving the wise man nod, and Jey Uso's in the corner fucking eating his own soul alive. And this is the greatest story going on in wrestling right now. This is the greatest, most consistent story we've had in a while, because we've gone now from I don't know how you say this, from him being the joke, from him being the guy that's like, oh, who's this funny guy, to Jimmy kind of liking him, to Solo liking him and respecting him immediately, to Roman being like, yeah, you know, you're not bad. You could see a story in the future where Jey Uso loses his shit on Sammy, and all the rest of the family turn on Jay instead of turning on Sammy, who's like the actual outsider, and him just having a breakdown. And I think before we have the actual fallout, if there's going to be a breakdown of the bloodline, before there's an actual fallout, I want to see Jey Uso just like lose his shit. Because of all them that have fallen under Roman Reigns' banner, so to speak, he was one. He was the right-hand man. He was the, you know, main event Jay. And for now, he's like the one friend in the group that sees how annoying one of the other people is, and everybody else loves him, and it's like nobody else gets it but him. And I just, it's so fucking good. But at the same time, Sami Zayn has gone from somebody who just like wanted to weasel his way into Roman's group for, you know, to advance his own thing, to somebody who genuinely wants to be there. So Jey Uso is now mad at Sami Zayn from a month ago. So the like I say, I keep going back to it. I keep saying the same thing and finding different ways to say it. But the way they've played this story off, and none of the people in this group have fought each other, really. Like, Solo hasn't fought his brothers. Roman hasn't fought his cousin. I mean, Roman fought Jay before Jay fell into line. But I don't think any of them have individually fought Sami Zayn. I just think for there to be this much drama between now six guys, if you want to include Paul Heyman, and none of them have actually laid a hand on each other, it's fucking brilliant. I don't care. Like I say, Kenny and Hangman can suck my dick. This is a better story than, oh, I lost a match, I think I better go get drunk with my buddies for a while and knock up my wife. It might get me a title at the end of the day. That's not a story. This is a story. And the pity that you felt for Sami Zayn, the relief that you felt for Sami Zayn, the immediate sympathy you felt for Jey Uso because he's about to lose it, is real, because they've made it real, and it's so fucking good, and it's not the last time we're going to talk about them tonight. Liv Morgan defeated Lacey Evans, which is kind of everything and nothing, because I have no idea what they're doing with Lacey Evans right now. She came out with, like, war-colored, like, face paint on, like, one side of her face, but it was smudged, so it looked like she had a black eye on her forehead, which would, I guess, just be a bruise, and I kind of sound silly now that I've said that. And things are falling. Yay! But the match went a decent amount of time. Both ladies in the match were good. Lacey Evans is not a bad wrestler. Liv Morgan is a fan favorite that is carrying the crowd in the palm of her hand, depending on who you talk to. But it gave the commentary way too much time to say, yeah, I mean, she's the champion, but, like, she's way over her head. I'm like, don't spend an entire match saying that while she's beating somebody. And then obviously she beats Lacey Evans with that inverted facebuster thing she does off the ropes that I can't... The Oblivion! There we go. Thank you, Brain. And all the time, the commentary, people are saying, like, well, she's such a nice person. She doesn't have a mean bone in her body. She can't go extreme. And then she brings out a kendo stick and absolutely beats the ever-loving shit out of Lacey Evans, who didn't do anything to deserve it other than being the de facto heel in the match, and then put her through a table with a senton, which is kind of funny because she's not the biggest person in the world, and yet she still makes a senton through a table work. Sasha Banks, how come you couldn't do that in Hell in the Cell? Just asking for a friend. Ongoing story throughout the night was Shinsuke Nakamura, Hit Row, and the Street Profits having a SmackDown watch party in the back of SmackDown, and throughout the night various people show up. I mean, B-Fab is talking to Sonya Deville at one point. I think Drew Gulak shows up at one point. The Lotharios are told to leave after they hit on B-Fab, and then they come back later on in the night and superkick everybody. So that was, again, kind of everything and nothing, but I think they're trying to give the Lotharios something to do. It gave multiple hits of screen time to Hit Row and the Street Profits, and like I say, Shinsuke's kind of there, which is nice, I guess. Madcap Moss and Ricochet in the back try to talk to Sami Zayn about how he's been brainwashed and how he's not really part of the bloodline and rah, 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 rah. And then Solo absolutely trucks these guys into the wall. I hate using that because I think people overuse it, but in this case, it's absolutely true. They're standing in front of those big metal bay doors, and we all know, the only reason you do the attack in front of the bay doors instead of the wall, because that bay door, when it's hit, it makes a rattling sound. So, like, for the audio of a backstage segment, you want to do it up against something like that, but he owns them. It's funny, because you can see on Twitter, people have passed the clip around, he takes Ricochet by the head, and sort of bounces his head off the door twice, and the third bounce Ricochet does on his own because he's not holding his head anymore, and it does look a little bit comical, but it's the first sign really of Sami Zayn on his own and somebody from the bloodline having his back, and I thought that was so important, and I thought it was so cool that it was Solo rather than Jimmy, even, because Solo's the newest guy to the group, and if he immediately takes a liking to Sami Zayn, that adds to the story as well. We get a great video package on the Unified Tag Team title reign of the Usos, narrated by Paul Heyman. I think they've played this one before, if I'm honest, but it's really good. WWE's really good at video packages. It's fine. And then, yeah, it sets us up for the main event later on tonight. Strowman versus Otis was a thing, was it not? Kind of cool, because it wasn't a complete squash, so it got us a chance for us to see Otis in a singles match, which we haven't seen in a long time, remind us what he can do. Strowman obviously beat him. Strowman obviously did the big powerbomb on him once again. And, alright, my camera's flashing at me. So, we're going to see if we can make the power cord go without the camera turning off, or without the microphone turning off. That'll be nice, won't it? So, how does that work? Does that work? Do you guys still hear me? I might have to do something. Hold on a second. There we are. Love technology. Love technology. The ironic thing about all of this is, as I'm mostly audio now, I'm still using the microphone from my video camera. I just don't like being on camera much anymore. Not gonna lie, I had to go find an extension cord, had to go find a whole bunch of other things, and here we are, we're back. But that would have just been a second of a cut for you, so why am I telling you guys any of that? I don't really know. It might be kind of tired in here. So yeah, Strowman defeated Otis, as we thought he would, but not in a way that made him look like a goof. Everybody wins. Everybody wins. You know who doesn't win? Drew McIntyre, who was apparently dealing with food poisoning on SmackDown and still put himself on an IV drip to get himself in good enough shape to come out and cut a promo. He came out, he cut a promo about Karrion Kross and how Karrion Kross keeps ducking him, which isn't exactly true because he's just not been there when he called him out, but it is what it is. He came out with a big strap. Obviously, you could tell from the minute he walked out that he was going to give him a strap match at Extreme Rules, but he cuts a big promo about what it means to be in a strap match at Extreme Rules. Scarlett comes out, does the typical entrance. Karrion Kross tries to jump him from behind, but Drew McIntyre knows better. He beats him up until Scarlett jumps in front of him to protect her man. Isn't it lovely? And then she tries to do the fireball gimmick, and it doesn't really work. It goes sort of sideways past his head. So apparently they called the rest of it on the fly. They got back into a brawl. She hit him with a low blow. Kross put him in the cross jacket, and that was the end of it. And as he was in the choke, he kept on screaming at Drew McIntyre. He kept on screaming, "Let it go, let it go." And everybody's like, "Oh, he's making a Frozen reference." I'm like, he's not making a Frozen reference. He's telling him to stop fighting for consciousness because it's a choke. But yeah, they're going to have a strap match at Extreme Rules, and it's going to be good. It could be the main event, seeing as we don't have a world title match, but that's another story for another day. Now, let me touch on the fireball, because everybody thinks that this is a stick to beat WWE with, and it's really not. They did it back in NXT as well, when he did the fireball to Keith Lee. Here's the thing. a normal human being can do a terrible thing. I mean, look at the States down in 2020. Lots and lots of people did lots and lots of terrible things with fire, did they not? So, oh, he used a fireball, so he's definitely trying to be a supernatural character. He's not trying to be a supernatural character. Well, he comes out to a black and white entrance. Yeah, because he said, hey, it would look kind of cool if I came out to a black and white entrance. A normal, everyday person can rig a fireball. And you know how I know that? Because wrestlers are normal, regular people that have just rigged up a fireball. And he's like, okay, I can use fire, and the fire will hurt this person. A normal person can think that, and as I say once again, go back 2 years, normal people, or I hesitate to say normal people, but regular humans, shall we say, were using fire to hurt a whole lot of people, and buildings, and whole cities. And I don't think they were supernatural beings, I think they were just assholes. But that's another story for another day. You can just say, hey, my girlfriend can distract you with a fireball, and I can hit you in the nuts. Or, hey, you can open up what you think is a NXT title contract and get a fireball in the face and not be able to fight in said championship match. That doesn't have to be a supernatural thing. It really, really doesn't. Undertaker coming down, resurrecting himself, crawling out of the dirt after a buried alive match. That's some supernatural shit. You can complain about that if you want to, but then you can just go outside and touch grass. It's just fine. We get the announcement that in 2 weeks at the season premiere, whatever that means, of SmackDown, we are getting Gunther Sheamus 2 for the Intercontinental Championship. And again, people go off about, oh my god, it's just another rematch, it's just another rematch. Okay, how many times did they do Punk and Mox? Anyways, moving swiftly on. Shotzi's face turn continues as she helps Raquel Rodriguez in a 3-on-1 situation against Damage Control, which is good. It's rumored that she's bringing her tank back, which is also good. The match itself was actually Raquel versus Dakota, and commentary actually played up the history between Raquel and Dakota on NXT, which will always make me happy. Shotzi and Raquel fending off three people. I mean, you're stretching believability. Now, if she had come out with like a newly cleared to wrestle Aaliyah, and now you're building to another ladies trios match, that would have been fine if they do that at Extreme Rules. Even if Aaliyah's not 100%, you can hide that in a trios match and have her come in, do a couple of spots, and leave. Which I think they should do, actually. A little bit of comedy here. We had the New Day versus the Maximum Male Models. Now, if you want to be a stickler and say that the New Day should be doing better things with their time, I won't argue with you. That's fine. But the Maximum Male Models are fun. Remember fun. For those of you that remember Mansoor when he first debuted, Mansoor is way better than anybody gives him credit. Oh, he's just that guy that they push super hard on the Saudi shows. And it's like, well, they should have been pushing him on Raw and SmackDown and NXT as well. But, you know, God forbid. And, I mean, Massey used to be Mace from Retribution that you guys didn't like anyway. So what are you complaining about? What I like about this is you had Max and Maxine Dupree. Yeah. At the outside, Maxine grabs a camera from one of the cameramen and starts taking pictures of the guys in the ring, and because they spend way too much time posing, the New Day get the win. Max loses his shit, beats his jacket around the desk, and leaves the rest of them there while Maxine Dupree and her boys are still sitting there at ringside. We go one more step farther to Max Dupree being gone and the return of L.A. Knight. Yeah, and that's all you need. This took like a couple of minutes. You could have gone and taken a piss while this happened. It's fine. Usos versus Butch and Rich was a Butch and Ridge. There we go. English words. Words are important. Sheamus and Solo and Sammy are all on the outside. They're brawling on the outside while the match is happening on the inside. Now, what we saw of the match was really good. You got the Usos, who are super over and sort of come off as being sort of undefeatable at the moment, versus Pete Dunne, who's Pete Dunne, Ridge, who's like his Diesel, I guess, if you want to make a really loose comparison. Really good, like hard-hitting Ridge stuff, absolute bone-cracking joint manipulation stuff, and Usos doing Uso stuff. And I know that sounds cliche, it sounds like I'm doing the Lucha Things joke, but like, we know what to expect from the Usos because they're fucking fantastic. Take your focus out to the outside. Sheamus, Solo Sikoa, and Sami Zayn brawl on the outside. They're quickly joined by Imperium and Gunther to put out Sheamus to plug their match for 2 weeks from now. And because of all the kerfuffle, let's just say all the kerfuffle, on the outside, Usos do retain. But you know what? They're gonna retain anyway, aren't they? At this point, at least there's a... I know protection booking isn't everybody's favorite thing, but Butch and Ridge were not gonna win this match. At least now you've got a reason that they didn't win the match, and that's fine. And oh, the headline of the night is, no, we did not in fact get The Fiend. We are gonna talk about that shortly. Now, let's look forward to next week. Alpha Academy versus Gargano and Owens. Riddle versus Priest. Apparently, according to Twitter, we're getting Sami Zayn versus AJ. So, Bloodline crosses all other lines. Awesome. NXT next week, you've got Wesley versus Tony D in a ladder qualifier match. You've got Cameron Grimes versus Joe Gacy in their quote-unquote final match. Books Jensen and Josh Briggs are taking on Gallus. I don't really know why. Caden Carter is taking on Nikita Lyons, which I think is meant to promote the fact that Nikita Lyons and Zoe Stark are going to get their tag team title match. Maybe at Halloween Havoc. I'm not sure. I could be putting that together. And I think, I swear I heard this, but I can't find it listed anywhere. I think Mandy Rose is defending her unified NXT Women's Championship against Fallon Henley. But I could be wrong. I could have misheard that. They could be saving that for the first proper Black and Gold NXT episode. On SmackDown next week, we've got Shotzi versus Bayley, which is going to be awesome. We've got Solo and Sammy taking on Madcap and Ricochet, and we've got the Lotharios taking on Hit Row. Now, before I get into the takeaways, I do want to give WWE some credit. Surprise, surprise, I'm giving WWE credit because it's deserved. Right up until the last days of Vince McMahon getting screwed out of his job, the biggest criticism, and it was absolutely true, was there was no long-term booking in WWE. Things were changing on the night, shows were being rewritten as they were happening, etc., etc., etc. Nothing connected. You couldn't depend on the thing you were enjoying this week even being a thing next week. That's absolutely true. As I say, I always have to balance out the two things. Yes, I think Vince McMahon got absolutely fucked out of his job. I think Vince McMahon absolutely got fucked out of his company. But that doesn't change the fact that, of course, Triple H is making it a fuck ton better. Now, instead of not even being able to book week to week to week, WWE, think about this for a second, are simultaneously promoting four pay-per-views. Extreme Rules, we got Liv versus Ronda in a no DQ. We've got Bayley versus Bianca in a who knows what the fuck it's going to be match. You got Riddle versus Rollins in the return of the fight pit. You've got Drew McIntyre taking on Karrion Kross in a strap match. At Crown Jewel, you have the absolute spectacle that is Roman Reigns defending the Unified World title against Logan Paul. At Halloween Havoc, you've got Breaker versus JD McDonagh versus Dragunov and half of an already established ladder match for the vacant North American Championship. And look forward to Survivor Series, where, yes, we are getting the return of War Games. Tell me the last time any company, Impact, AEW, WWE, NXT, tell me the last time any company has simultaneously promoted four pay-per-views. You can't do it. You can't do it. Now, takeaways from this week. Obviously, Roman versus Logan is a thing. The Fight Pit coming back is a thing. War Games coming back is a thing. I do want to send a quick shout-out to WWE because video packages are a thing. They are becoming a weekly thing, and I think that's awesome. We did it initially. In the first couple of weeks, we really put a heavy focus on the Intercontinental title itself and the U.S. title itself. We ran back-to-back weeks of promotional material for those belts specifically. Then we got into individual stars. We got one for Alexa Bliss on Raw, and she wasn't even in a title situation. We got one on SmackDown this past Friday for the Usos and their tremendous, tremendous reign as tag team champions. WWE have taken what they do for a pay-per-view's kickoff, for a pay-per-view's pre-match video package, and how good they are at all those. Because even at their worst, WWE has always been good at the production, the video package side of things, and they've applied it to weekly programming, and that is fucking fantastic. The Halloween Havoc ladder match is a good way to resuscitate something really, really kind of bad that they did with the title. dropping it on Solo for a week for a bunch of photo ops so that all the Bloodline could have belts and then dropping it immediately back to NXT was a little bit messy, but once again, at the first pay-per-view of the NXT 3.0 era, actually being Halloween Havoc, actually being that particular title defended in that particular type of match is fucking brilliant. It is the absolute best of a bad situation. And the last takeaway, and I think this is going to be true for a while, is just the Bloodline as a whole. The Bloodline as a group are fucking fantastic. The mini story with Jey Uso and Sami Zayn is fantastic. The way they've immediately incorporated Solo Sikoa is fucking fantastic. So the ultimate takeaway for the next while, until somebody can prove me wrong, is the Bloodline. Everything else in WWE, and you can see it by the fact that clearly we're getting the tag champions on both shows. We're getting the world title champion on both shows. We are getting Sammy hopping over to Raw this week to have a match with AJ Styles, and it's said in the layout or in the announcement of the match that he is going to have Solo Sikoa in his corner, so the Raw audience is going to put their eyes on Solo Sikoa as well. They haven't put a foot wrong with the Bloodline story, and I think it's fair to say, when you're talking about mainstream North American wrestling, there is nothing being executed better right now in pro wrestling than Roman Reigns and the Bloodline story. Now, the Wyatt stuff. They're doing the QR codes, they're doing the teases, they're doing the White Rabbit during the fact that they're doing the White Rabbit stuff during the commercial breaks so that the fans will tape it, so that they don't have to buy the rights to the song, is so fucking arrogantly brilliant. I have to tip my cap to Triple H. But the all the QR code stuff led to this week, and this week just gave you a QR code to next week, and people are mad about that. People are mad about that. The more anticipation, the better. Who's had better Extreme Rules matches and who's had more wacky Extreme Rules matches than Bray Wyatt? He's going to return at Extreme Rules. Any hints you get before that are silly. They're just silly. Just silly. I'm not going to say you're stupid. I'm not going to say you're right or wrong for being frustrated or not being frustrated. You can be as frustrated or not frustrated as you want, and that's entirely your right. Not everybody's going to be like me, thank God. Not everybody's going to be like you. Not everybody's going to be like a piss pot, like a JD from New York or a Michael Sidgwick or a whoever. But that is what makes the wrestling world go round at the end of the day. I like it. I don't know what I want this to be. I'm excited. Regardless, because we know the creative power of Wyndham Rotunda. But Husky Harris, Bray Wyatt, Funhouse Bray, The Fiend, all of them had shortfalls, but all of them were great creative strides, and all of them were different, and all of them weren't just like slight variations of the next. It's a lazy comparison, but the comparison between him and Mick Foley is completely apt. Like, Dude Love was not the same as Mankind, was not the same as Cactus Jack. Cult Leader Bray Wyatt is not the same as The Fiend, is not the same as whatever Husky Harris was. And to have the other side of The Fiend be the Funhouse Bray, that was the thing about the fun, where I'll give him the credit, and I'm pretty sure it was exactly the point. As creepy and as well executed as The Fiend was, The Fiend made Funhouse Bray the more unsettling thing. It's why people don't like clowns, you know? Nothing that's pretending to be that happy is actually that happy. It was that kind of thing. I don't know what I want this to be. Do I want... Because the Cult Leader Bray Wyatt kind of got buried. The Fiend literally burned and got frittered away, as some people would say. Do I want to see either of those come back? Do I want to see something entirely new? I don't know. I really don't know. I don't want whatever it is to come back and then my immediate reaction to be, well, I wish it had been this instead. But who knows? I think things are a lot looser with Triple H instead of Vince. Like, that goes without saying. I think whatever he comes up with, it's not going to be a loser, for sure. But I don't know. It's interesting. And I'm going to cap this off now with other people that might show up in WWE in the next... who knows when. Legado del Fantasma officially made their leave from NXT a while ago, so they're still on the cusp. I wonder when they're coming in. I wonder who they're going to go again. Legado del Fantasma versus the Brawling Brutes would be a nice trios match, I think. I don't know whether they'll do that, because SmackDown feels pretty loaded for what is the shorter show. with Johnny Gargano making his recent return, you gotta wonder if and when Candice LeRae will be joining us. I mean, obviously, if she decides to stay at home and be the mom and let him do the wrestling, that's entirely fine. Rumors were swirling around Clash at the Castle about Tegan Nox, which would have been really, really awesome back then. But, I mean, Tegan Nox is Tegan Nox. Tegan Nox can come back at any time and be a welcome addition to any women's roster. Madison Rayne's doing her thing over in AEW, which lends itself to more and more rumors of Tennille Dashwood coming back to WWE, which I think would be awesome. The latest two to sort of really, really want to leave the promised land of Tony Khan, and that's Malakai Black and Buddy Matthews. Do they come back? Do they come back? Do they come back to WWE? And everybody's shitting on Malakai Black because he's leaving the promised land, and when the Buddy Murphy thing gains more traction, I'm sure he will too. But let me say something. When they were both in WWE, Aleister Black and Buddy Murphy, they sort of out of nowhere had this series of matches on Raw, and it went for weeks, and it felt like they just had a dead spot on the card, and it's like, okay, send them back out. They seem to be doing a good job. And it was something to look forward to, and I don't think we ever really knew the beginning and the end and what started it and why it went away, but I would like to see that. I would like to see them come back as a tag team. I'd like to see them come back as rivals. I would love for them to, like, shoot a YouTube video, right? Shoot a YouTube video of them fighting outside an AEW, and you couldn't do this on WWE programming because, like, copyright and all that sort of thing, but show them fighting over what the House of Black should be. And then Brody King just walks away and says, you guys are both idiots, get out of here. And then they fight out of the parking lot. And the video just kind of ends. And then some Monday Night Raw, 6 months from now, two bodies out in the distance, outside of an arena, just happen to be fighting and scuffling and brawling through the parking lot. And eventually they make their way into the ring, and now you have Aleister Black and Buddy Murphy fighting on the Raw ring for absolutely no reason. And it's like, we don't know when they got here, but we can remember what they did before. And then you just take it off. And this is the one time you deliberately make it a blind thing of, like, pretend they never left. Aleister Black joins Bray Wyatt, Karrion Kross, Scarlett, Alexa Bliss, and Dexter Lumis in some weird, like, fucked up House of Wyatt faction. I don't know, but I'm curious for what you guys are thinking. Like, what do you think of the Bray Wyatt stuff? Because we know he's coming. We know Legato's coming at some point. We hope Candice LeRae, and then Tegan Nox, Tennille Dashwood, Malakai / Aleister Black, and Buddy Murphy / Matthews. Of these, who do you think is coming back? Who do you want to come back? And when do you think we will see them? I've rambled for quite long enough, and thank you for putting up with me through technical difficulties. I will see you doing this again next Monday, but for now, as you can tell, my voice is fucking dying. I've been Spaz, your YWC reality check. This has been WWE Last Week. Subscribe up there, talk down there, start a conversation. Keep all these conversations going. Don't be a stranger. I will talk to each and every last one of you later, but for right now, I am tagging out. Bye, guys.